All right, push the damn button. Let's add some noise.
We're going to add some noise.
Add some noise to the world.
All right, Longville, are you ready to rock?
Greetings. This is the Long in the Boot podcast, the podcast coming to you from the heel of the boot of Southwest Louisiana. I am your host, G Long, and sitting across the way for our twice a month date is Deb.
Yes, our bi-monthly date. How have
you been?
I have been well.
It's been a while since I've seen you.
It has. We're trying to get back into our routine.
Tens of minutes.
Okay. You always do that. It's kind of old now.
I don't care.
You're going to keep doing it?
I am.
All right. Well, that's indeed.
You know what else I'm going to do?
What?
I'm going to say that if you'd like to reach the Long in the Boot podcast.
Good on you.
Thank you very much. You can email us at longintheboot@gmail.com. You can call us at 337-502-9011 and leave a message. I may even answer it, but it just depends.
No, you're very receptive to engaging.
Unless
the person that's trying to engage you is a lunatic.
Is when I get a call on that line.
Yeah, it's spam likely.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
Spam likely aside, the problem is a lot of times people's names don't come through.
Okay.
And so then it's more likely that it's spam likely calling.
It doesn't tell you. Usually it says it for me.
Because this is coming through the Gmail phone system.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah, it's not important.
No, it's not. So move forward, G. Move forward. It's been 2 weeks.
It has. It's been 2 weeks.
Things have happened. We've had Thanksgiving. Babies have been had. Wars have broken out. Hostages have been released. And the political front continues in all of its lunacy. So all is right in the world.
Yeah, well,
as we know it,
if that is in fact right.
Well, it does seem to be the norm.
It's been the most repetitive, what
I've been living with for some time now. Yes.
Yeah. Hmm. Speaking of something.
Yeah. What?
That has just gone on and on and on.
What is droning?
Christmas music.
Oh, we do have
it. I'm diving right in.
Listening audience, we have a situation in our neighborhood.
I don't know how to even handle it.
It's maddening. It's a bit enraging.
We've been discussing it, and it got us on. It sort of goes with what we're going to talk about.
Well, it supports our topic, yes.
Do
you want to start?
I would like to go into the topic, but I can't do it.
You can't. No, on December 1st in our neighborhood, it's not news that I get up very early in the morning and I take my dogs out usually around 3:30-ish.
I would like to emphasize ridiculously early. Go ahead.
My body does it. I listen to my body. And since December 1st, Christmas music has been wafting through our neighborhood.
Now, you may think, they must live next to a mall, but
It's a nightmare mall because it has not shut off. Today is December 3rd. We're recording on the 3rd, and it has been going on now 24/7 since December 1st. It's a radio station out of Lake Charles, and they started playing Christmas music on the 1st. And our neighbor, for some reason,
Not even a neighbor. This guy doesn't live close.
No, it's fairly far down the road.
He's down the street.
And he's been, apparently his garage door is open.
By the way, he has many neighbors much closer.
Nobody's called the popo, which I find shocking.
Wait a minute.
Okay.
To be fair.
Well, I've questioned all of the possibilities.
The noise ordinances here do not apply in the daytime. There is no noise ordinance during daylight hours.
That's fine. And it's not so overwhelming that we can sleep. We don't hear it in our house. But
it's not so loud that it's like at a concert.
No, but if you live next door to him, I'll bet it's fairly loud.
And the issue is the angle of the garage
Okay, is carrying.
Which is closed at one end and open at the other, which means basically it's a speaker.
Yes.
Okay, that's where the radio
broadcasting
is.
Broadcasting Christmas music 24/7.
24/7.
And they don't have a large variety.
No, no, it's a local radio station. It's the local radio station that is playing the loop of Christmas songs.
It's very bizarre. So we're waiting to see what happens there.
Well, I'm hoping one of my neighbors loses it. And just,
what? I don't want him to lose it. First thought is, knock, knock, knock. Hey, it's really loud.
And the problem is, you might ask yourself, why don't you go tell him? Well, first of all, I don't really know him. And second of all,
it seems the neighborhood's a little frightened.
I don't know about that. stop that.
Okay, I'm making shit up.
Anyway, but I think the thing is, people here around us, we all live that life. Well, basically, it's the Gadsden flag, right? Don't tread on me.
Just let me.
We all kind of live that way.
Is that why we haven't called the police? It's because when I come in my house, I don't hear it. So it's not
exactly.
It's
not harming me.
But I'm sure the people on either side of him.
But much
must
like,
be
but much like a heat rash, when I go outside, I can't but listen to this tinny. And it is tinny. There's no bass to it.
And
at
you
all.
Hear the DJ too making his.
Oh yeah, it's whatever that channel is in Lake Charles, 92.9 maybe, whatever one plays Christmas music until I don't know
until Christmas.
2/3 of the population dies or whatever. I don't even know. It's. This is, to me, this is like torture music. This is what I would do if I was questioning like a hardcore terrorist. I would play this music at them.
Okay, so me being me, I go through all the possibilities, right? Is he deaf and he doesn't know?
Well, my thought immediately went to, he started it and then he died.
And he's, well, we talked about a welfare check. Did we need to call somebody for a welfare check? But then we called a neighbor who's closer to him and discovered that, no, he's okay over there.
Yeah, he's okay.
He's not.
And I don't know if he's hard of hearing, maybe.
If he's
and
angry.
I know. You could say,
is he angry at the neighborhood?
You could say, well, why don't you just go knock on his door and say something? Well,
we're not that close.
But here's the thing. He's got people.
In proximity or.
He's got people much closer.
That should be. All right. We're going to let it go because I don't know the circumstance. Maybe it's some kind of PTSD and he needs Christmas music to soothe him. I don't know.
I don't know either.
And it's 2023 and I'm nervous to. I don't know what the right thing is here.
And speaking of the right thing.
Segue.
Speaking of the right thing.
See how I gave that to you?
Yeah. Well,
I'm so good.
We started talking about this term. The moral imperative.
Moral imperative. Because last week we talked about mental health.
Yeah. And imperative means you have to do it.
You just have to. It's duty driven. So where did that?
Without the word moral, it's just imperative.
Yeah. And you need to do it.
You must do it.
Yeah. But that might be taking a dump.
Well, but I mean, here's the thing. That word existed and it's clearly Latin based and it meant something, but it doesn't, you can't use it by itself.
What, imperative or moral?
No, the idea of imperative, that everyone must do it. Because when the Renaissance and the Enlightenment come around, then you're going to have a problem with people going, but why?
Well, that is the terrifying question that the people in charge worry about, isn't it?
Well, I think
so. That everybody asks why. They just want them to do.
And so we have what's known as the moral imperative. And where does it come from? Where?
Okay. Well, it goes back to the history. You want to start back to where we.
Yeah. I mean, I can go that way.
Well, that's our job here. We do the history. We do the now. We do the later.
There is a philosopher by the name of Immanuel Kant.
Thank you. Get to the German.
Or Kant.
Kant. You have to say Kant.
I know. Immanuel Kant.
All right.
But I don't like saying Kant because it's too close to something.
To the C word. Which is actually a word I don't use very often.
Yeah. I don't like that word either.
No, I don't either.
But
feels.
Anyways, he was a philosopher of the Enlightenment. I mean, that's basically it. It's 1780s.
Yeah, when we're thinking about the place of a human, an individual in the world, not so much thinking about the whole, but it.
But during the Enlightenment, because of all the discoveries in especially the sky and math, and they started coming up with these ideas of what philosophy changed. Philosophy
is a shift.
Yeah, it began to try to answer questions that really don't have an answer necessarily.
But it's good of us to wrestle with them.
Right.
Morality.
Yeah. And ethics. There was this whole thing about the self. That in the age of reason, which is what this is, there's this thing about the self. And so you have like Rousseau who said, I think, therefore I am. I exist because I think. Kant is more of the, what can I know?
Yes. And what can I do? I am because I do, because of action.
Well, yeah. But the question he was asking was really, truly is why do we do what we do? What is imperative?
What is the drive that makes that happen?
And he came up with this idea of
categories. Clearly, we're not doing the right thing today throughout the world.
Well, actually, there's a kind of a new thought about people using the idea of moral imperative, and they're just using it as a marketing term now. Like it ruined its actual meaning.
Yeah, that it's no
longer. Everything is a moral imperative.
Well, because some people do the right thing now so that they can be seen. That's one of those dilemmas in psychology. You know, man A decides to help woman X because he wants to be recognized for his action. And one man does it just because he doesn't want to personally feel guilty about not helping. And then finally, you have somebody who helps just because it's because you're supposed to. It's the right thing. That's right. The one who's more honest in their action because they gain nothing from it. There's no extra thought of, well, how does this affect me? It's just that woman needs help. I'm going to go help her.
Right.
But we don't act that way anymore. We act for the camera. We act for the recognition. We act for the, you know.
This is the general we, of course.
Yes.
If you are not one of these people.
Some people might do the right thing.
What is a moral imperative? Basically, and I'm going to put it in as simple terms as I can first, a strongly felt principle that compels a person to act.
Yes.
That's on its surface, that's a moral imperative.
And to do what they reasonably see as the right thing.
And Kant took that idea and he tried to categorize things and it ends up becoming called categorical imperative, but it's the same thing.
Or dentotologist. He was a dentotologist.
Kant took the idea of imperative to be a dictate of reason.
Yes.
So not only is it, you know, an imperative, it's reasonable. Okay. And this was a big deal for these people. He's said that no moral law can be self-defeating. Okay.
All right.
And it cannot be contrary to reason. Many people at that time, when he said it, said, well, that's the divine voice speaking through human spirit.
Oh, took it to God, telling you the right thing to do.
Now, here's the thing about that. In that particular mindset, the dictates of conscience are simply right. And often resist further justification. So they're not necessarily moral, but they are considered right. This is where it gets kind of sticky.
Well, yeah, because considered right by who and in your time period.
So the experience of conscience is the experience of encountering the right.
In all decisions, every day.
And an example of moral imperative or categorical imperative is, for instance, to go into someone's house to save a baby in a burning crib. Mm-hmm. An example, not following a moral imperative would be making a promise that you don't intend to keep because you're going to benefit from it. Right? So that's
to gain something.
That's not following the moral imperative.
Yes.
The moral imperative is you save the baby. Even though breaking into the house is illegal, doesn't matter. You're going to save that baby. You know the right thing to do.
Yes. And those in psychology and sociology are filled with those kinds of questions. Those are the gray area questions.
They are.
And that's what makes it so difficult because not everybody thinks in those terms.
Well, maybe that's the problem now.
And it takes time to think that way.
I mean, reason, to be rational.
Yes.
Maybe that's the problem. Maybe there's just not enough rational people now.
All right. Well, I mean, we don't want to go to the scientific side of it yet. So,
said under this idea, a person can act only according to the maxim that whereby you can at the same time will that it should become universal law. In other words, when you act, if you're acting in a truly moral imperative, categorical imperative,
logical
type of
fashion.
Way,
yes, Jim.
That is part of a universal law.
Yes. Live your life as though your every act were to become a universal law.
Yes. There you go.
Okay. That's the quote I have that from.
I like that better.
Yeah. It's succinct. It gets to it.
Well, they've turned it around. They paraphrased it and it works better, actually.
All right. All right. So it's pure reason and acting correctly.
Yeah.
Yes.
he didn't like moral philosophy. He thought the idea of moral philosophy in that his time was not complete. He was upset with, for instance, at one point, hypothetical moral systems cannot persuade moral action or be regarded as basis for moral judgments because the imperatives on which they are based rely on subjective considerations.
Well, and
everybody is looking at it from a different aspect, so it can't be universal. And that's so it doesn't fit.
Okay.
His whole thing is when you are acting in a purely
well, that should cross time and societal norms. Be doing the right thing should not be subject to justification by your time period. Yeah. Okay, well, then if we do that, then we're going back, okay, slavery, right? I mean, that it was the norm. It was acceptable by a large number of people. Was it the right thing? The Quakers said no.
Yeah.
That group said, no, it's not right. We won't do it. But yet, so good people held slaves? And in their mind, they justified it?
They didn't consider what they were doing wrong. No,
because of the time period.
I would assume at some point, though, there had to be doubt.
And you don't know what a man wrestles with in his head, right?
Well.
I don't know. You should. Like, okay.
And he didn't discount. People have accused Kant of being, you know, a non-believer. He argued that his ethical theory required belief in free will, belief in God, and the immortality of the soul.
Okay.
He said, although we cannot have knowledge of these things, reflection on the moral law leads to a belief in them, which amounts to a kind of rational faith. Thus, in answer to the question, what may I hope? Kant said, we may hope that our souls are immortal and that there really is a God who designed the world in accordance with the principles of justice.
That we try to follow.
We hope.
We hope.
The best we can
is hope. All right. And that's what drives us each and every day.
Yeah.
Shh. Did you hear that?
Was that a cat?
That was a cat.
Where?
In our hallway.
Why is there a cat in the hallway?
Because we're country people and we have a cat.
Oh, okay.
We have two cats.
We have a cunt.
All right. That it's getting so physical or so metaphysical. It's existential or whatever. Yes. So really what we're thinking about here is the moral imperative, that duty to do right, should fall to the people. Well, it should fall to every individual, but the problems I think we've been facing here since time began, is the people we trust and put in charge because we think they have qualifications, mm-hmm. skill. We give them some kind of power or authority over us to do the right things.
Yes.
And that has not been happening. And we're seeing it now more than ever. I mean, you know, one of the things when I was thinking about this topic that popped up in my head is that I gave a man like Bill Cosby throughout my childhood some sort of
wait, did he do something?
Credence because I felt like he was just a good person.
Yeah.
A good, upstanding man who would do the right thing in all situations. And I know he's just a human. You know, I recognize that, but on that bargain that we make with famous people or people we've given some power to, they get money and they live in some level of comfort based on society saying, I really kind of like you. You're good. You're good at what you do, whether it be showing your ass or doing something excellent. You're gaining from us.
I love your OnlyFans channel.
Thank you. And I shut up. And I see, that's not me. I wouldn't.
Oh, I didn't mean you. Okay. I just meant in a hypothetical situation.
Because anybody that knows me would.
You're really giving back.
Yes, you're really contributing to society. But if people are willing to. Okay, so we're in a bargain with these people. And I'm talking about him as an entertainer, not our politicians at the highest levels.
Yeah.
Which is so much more of a violation. But he violated that with all those people. You know, we gave him that kind of moral ground.
He violated a huge.
And I was a grown up when he was pedestal. Revealed, but it's still kind of a little, takes it down a notch.
It's not as much fun to listen to his comedy albums.
Well, no, I can't. And even when I think in my head, Noah, all of the good lessons he taught me in the cartoons, and it's sad. It's sad is what I'm saying when they disappoint us like that. And yet, is it fair to put that on them? Because they are just human and we suck sometimes.
But humans should attempt to live in a. See, that's the problem is.
If we all did it, it'd be an amazing world.
Well, I think the problem is you have too many. First of all, Kant, his philosophy does not take into account the power, the sheer power of economics.
Well, yeah, that's the thing that goes against our right, our drive or will to do right is, well, if I do that, I'm going to lose some money.
Right.
These people, if I say the truth, I'm going to lose these people who support me.
And I don't know what Kant would say about this, you know, but because would he have become, well, everybody needs, because the moral, the moral imperative is that everybody shares everything equally.
Yeah. You know,
but I don't know that that can happen.
Well, you know, I do have a little example of that. I was reading an article from HuffPost called Why Is It So Hard to Do the Right Thing? And it was written back in 2012. And at that time, during the article writing, Rodney King was being buried. And they had also just Chief Justice Roberts had just passed down his decision on Obamacare, on the Affordable Care Act. And apparently that just went against everything they thought he was going to do because he put principle over politics. And apparently America in 2012 was shocked that he said everybody should have, you know, health care. And in a country like ours, isn't that the right thing to do? If I can support bombing Ukraine, I should support, you know, letting people deliver a baby if you have the money to go to a higher level of health care.
Make it even simpler than that. No one should go bankrupt because of health care bills.
Yes.
The idea of that is insanity in a country as wealthy as ours when it would have been so much easier to take care of the problem at the beginning. And so that allows people to go, well, that's the problem. No, the problem is they've gamed the system.
Yes.
They don't talk about how insurance companies, once Obamacare was passed, one of the first things that happened is there became a conglomerate of insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies and healthcare provider companies all buying each other's stock.
All supporting each other.
Right.
So it limits
any chance of competitive pricing.
Yes. And we know monopolies are bad. The government already acted on that.
And this isn't a single monopoly. It's not one company. It's interlocking boards of directors and interlocking ownership deals that combine insurance companies. And, of course, a lot of people's retirement and 401ks are wrapped up in this.
So you can't change it.
And healthcare provider companies, again, ditto.
Mm-hmm.
All of it, pharmaceutical companies.
Are all linked into that.
Yes.
Which actually ties back to the scientific side of this. Did you want to go there now?
We can.
Did we want to talk about that?
Talk about why people make horrible, evil decisions?
Well, either that or because every one of us, we could do personal stories. I'm sure everybody has their own where they did something and they know it was the right thing to do.
Well, I think we do.
And that makes you feel good. But did you do it only so you wouldn't feel bad?
No. LaRouche Foucault said
LaRouche.
That you should only do acts in, or you should, how did he say it? Only do acts where you don't expect praise. And it was like that when he talks about do in the dark what you would, or do in the light, or do in the dark what you would do in the light, and do in the light what you would do in the dark. Meaning basically live your life at all times the best you can possibly live it. And so I think that's.
Well, and now we're on camera all the time.
Oh, well,
now when you don't do the right thing, or when you do the right thing,
it can go either way.
It can go.
I don't think cameras are a valid means of
policing and controlling moral imperatives in people. Like, well, then that's the point. If, nobody's doing it for the right reason. They're
if
only,
you are,
and does that matter?
If you're not, here's a perfect example. Let's say you're a security guard. And you don't shoot some guy and it's caught on film. Did you not shoot him because you were
because
on film?
You were on
Would
film?
You have shot him? That's a question.
Well,
a valid question.
It is a valid question. And do you, and
but then here's the I kicker. Mean, if he didn't shoot the guy because it was on film, but he wanted to, what's worse?
I don't know. I mean, Gandhi said just doing the act without worrying about an end or what's going to come of it, just do it anyway. Do it because it's the right thing to do, and don't worry about.
But it's a scary idea that if we only don't do things, like,
yeah, no. Well, isn't it like our social score?
Oh, yeah.
Because then your social score goes down. So then we're only doing the right thing, not because of a moral imperative, not because of an internal drive or a compass that I believe we're all born with. Like,
well, this goes back
because sometimes I don't do the right thing and I do feel horrible and it does weigh on me and I try to rectify it or justify it in my head. But ultimately, I can't pray a lie.
Yeah.
I mean, I know. So
it's
you do it. You stop and pick up that child because they were close to the highway. And
I suppose so. Or put out a fire.
You put out that fire for that family. Had no idea. You did it because it was the right thing to do.
Well, their dog was in trouble too.
Well, there you go. You're saving a pet.
So I wasn't. I was saying. Question. Uh-huh. No, there's no way I would. It didn't matter. I just saw a fire burning in somebody's backyard.
And knows it's not right.
And me and my buddies.
You knows it's not right.
Jumped out of the car, went and put it out with the garden hose, saved the dog, and
carried on your way.
And then got in the car and left.
Didn't say nothing. That's fine.
And also got no help because nobody was home. Everybody was working.
Yeah.
It was like a working class neighborhood. Nobody was home. Nobody saw that.
Okay.
But I'm always laughing, thinking, because this was in a part of Lake Charles that was predominantly a black area. We were just driving around at lunchtime.
Because gas was 55 cents a gallon.
Well, we were all.
And you could.
We were all like 19. And we were driving around discussing philosophy at lunchtime before we had to go back to work.
Okay.
And we were in this neighborhood.
Well, see, and then that's karma, right? That was one of the things that people are driven to do the right thing because they don't want it to come back on them that they didn't do the right thing.
I had to do it. I stopped the car. I was like, stop, back up.
Yeah.
You know, I saw the flames. But the kicker is I always hoped that somebody watched it.
Just and reported just told it the to story later. Yeah.
Later just went. These white boys jumped out this car, went and put out that fire, saved that dog. And
and then just carried on.
Just got in the car and left. They were like three Lone Rangers.
Wait, that goes again.
No. So you have to have three Lone Rangers. You can't have the Lone Rangers. That doesn't work.
A Lone Ranger.
You know, you got three Lone Rangers.
About that time we were going to DeRidder and that truck driver was lying under his truck.
I thought he was dead.
We drove around like six times before we finally pulled over.
He never moved.
He didn't move.
I was like
he's had a heart attack under his truck.
I said,
we
can't just pull up because what if he's doing something and something falls on her? I didn't want to startle him.
But we drove around in a circle and so many times like and he just never moved.
Four times and he didn't move at all.
So ultimately.
So finally I was like, all right.
Let's do it.
We got to stop.
We got to check
on him. We have water in the car.
He would have had his stroke. He would have died by the time we stopped.
He could have been dead. That was my worry. He was dead under there.
Under there with a heart attack.
And I walk up. Hello. Hello. And finally he startles. Huh? I was like, oh, hey. I thought.
Are you okay?
I thought maybe you were dead or something. And he goes, I ain't dead. No, I know. I see that.
But his truck
would you like some water, sir? And I could use some water.
That is what we gave. We left him with some water.
He was waiting. They were coming to get him and fix his truck.
But it was taking.
And he had gotten in the shade under the truck and went to sleep.
Yes. So, but it, you know what? I hope that that man went home and said, you know what?
He's crazy.
These crazy people stopped to help me. And they didn't have to, and there are some kind people. I mean, those are the stories that make us go,
absolutely.
That is right. And you know how the nightly news always likes to end their broadcast with one positive story so that we forget about all the shit they just gave us.
And that's the moral imperative, right? You can't not do it. That's the thing about a moral imperative. You can't
Well,
not
wait a minute. We
it.
Just read The Destiny of the Republic and Guiteau shooting Garfield. He felt like God was driving him to do that. That was
he
his
was mentally
world.
Ill.
Well, that brings me to our next section of the topic.
Oh, what's that?
The science.
The brain.
The brain. Because,
oh, that pesky
brain.
Well,
the brain. Because we are not... solely independent in our existence. We have a driving force.
With this jelly.
Well, when I was researching and I had read the article about why is it so hard to do the right thing and let us forget labels and let us forget judgments that we carry with us through our lives and decide that, you know, because somebody lives in a trailer, they're not as good as you or, you know, whatever. Where we have these concepts and we put labels on people, we should rise above that. But during the article, she mentioned the prefrontal cortex. And then that led me on its own little chase of the scientific research, right?
So the front of the brain.
Yes, the prefrontal cortex is often not a match for the powerful baser instincts of the amygdala.
Right.
Because the amygdala drives our impulses, right? Drives our reflexive behaviors.
It responds to stress.
Yes, it is. And that's where our fight or flight is. All of that stuff is in our amygdala, but our prefrontal cortex is what drives our questioning. It's where we plan. It's where we think about things, and it works kind of slowly. It doesn't work as quickly. Amygdala makes quick, fast, rash emotional decisions.
Yeah.
And apparently by using the amygdala a lot, it gets stronger and actually increases
Swells.
In size. Same for the prefrontal cortex. If you practice doing the right thing, that area gets larger, gets stronger, but you're in constant battle with your amygdala and also with your raisin.
Well,
you're
sure.
in conflict with your societal drives, with apparently TikTok and everything that tells us how we should act.
Well,
it's
feeding you stressors too.
It is, and it's making the amygdala work harder and harder. I would have to assume, based on the minimal research that I did on the area, people who work in fields, ambulance drivers, hospital situation where you're in the emergency room and you've got high stress things happening all the time.
Yeah.
Those kinds of jobs. Their amygdala must be pretty large because they're dealing with fast decisions. Yeah. Okay. So.
And the problem is that makes you more responsive to stressors.
Yes.
That's
a vicious cycle.
The frontal cortex, it's where you are. The prefrontal cortex, that's the human you. That is what separates us.
From the animals.
Yeah.
Because that's that long-term thinking. It's the gray area.
It's all of our behavior
and the amygdala
outside of
is
eating
the black and white.
Yes.
Yeah. Where you just, it's right or wrong, act now.
That's where they zapped you when they gave you lobotomies, right? Change your behavior.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And then, okay, so you want your prefrontal cortex to be bigger and stronger, but in order to do that, you have to struggle through the amygdala's bull and actually make the right decisions as you go through your life, not just the things that are right for you. And that's the selfish aspect, right? Because that's your amygdala working. It's what's benefiting me.
Right.
That's not always possible to do. And then my next question was, what about the drugs that we give people? How is that affecting those areas cellularly? Yeah, at the cellular level. There we go. I can say that. But do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So is that affecting that? And then thereby we're seeing a society filled with people who don't recognize that they're being driven by their autopilot, by their amygdala.
Well, that would be, again, that same.
And how do you step back and take time and think?
Well, if your brain's not balanced, if you're not healthy, then
see, you said the magic word.
Balance.
Balance.
It's ethics, man. Where does ethics come? Same part of the brain, right?
Yes.
It's emotional. It's the, well, here's the thing though. If you have, I think that there are two different things going on. I think Kant did too with when it comes to making proper decisions.
Okay. Because he had a less difficult society.
Well, you've got the categorical imperative. This is why you should do this thing.
Okay.
He also had hypothetical imperative, but he said that hypothetical imperative is a moral obligation applicable only for a predetermined goal. So he said that there's
again.
Nothing moral about if you have a goal for and you do something
to get to that goal.
Even if you think it's a moral thing you're doing because there's a goal,
it's not.
It's independent of morality.
It's automatically a selfish act.
So if you go into
but
philosophy and study
right
morality to get a degree, you can't be doing it for the right reason.
All right, that just puts us in a catch 22, another contradiction that we can't and that's the thing, contradictions in people who we think we've put in power to do the right thing, and then their behavior is a contradiction to that expectation on the part of society.
Sure.
Has now driven us to a level of insanity.
And they've changed the meaning. I almost made a supercut of just bunches of people going, it's a moral imperative.
Yeah, because it's been a term
everybody,
kind of coming up all over.
Everybody
yes.
uses it.
Yes.
I've got Biden from his first year. By the way, if you want to see something, go look at Biden giving a speech his first year as president.
Versus now.
It's terrifying.
I was going to say that. That's a little added on that as I kept reading, the growth and the shrinkage of the prefrontal cortex. Actually, okay, you can do things as you go through your life to increase it in size. However, as we age, that automatically shrinks.
Well, everything does.
Yes, okay. Nothing's puffy anymore.
You don't see giant old people, you know, you just don't.
Well,
everybody shrinks.
Yeah, everybody shrinks. And big people die quicker than
sure.
small people, supposedly.
Yeah.
I'm being general. If you're big out there, I'm sorry. I'm not calling your time or anything.
Big is just, you know.
It's harder on the body.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You got more
to carry around, man.
So then that made me automatically go straight to our, you know, to Biden, to McConnell, to all those people who are trying to do things, hopefully moral imperatives, and they're not. And is that because their prefrontal cortex has gotten so tiny?
It's all shrunk up.
And then you can insult.
Like Mr. Burns on The Simpsons. Yes. He has no prefrontal cortex. He's driven completely by his amygdala.
His amygdala. So that's all, in the back of your head right there where the.
Yeah.
If you wore a headband, it would sit right there in that.
I like the idea, too, that it's a very simple thing. Here you go. Again, back to moral philosophy. The rightness of an action cannot be involved in how the outcome comes out. So
yeah, you just do it because it's
you can't justify the rightness of anything based on its outcome.
On its outcome or your expected outcome.
Because motive determines its moral value.
Yes.
To live ethically, one must never treat another human being as a means to a greater end. Politicians.
Yes.
Marketers. Human beings, by virtue of their unique ability to reason, are different from every other form of physical existence.
Okay. Oh, here it is. I ought, therefore I can.
Ooh.
Yeah. Honesty is better than any policy.
Okay.
I like the I ought, therefore I can. So I ought to. Therefore, I can. If I should do it, I can do it.
Yeah.
Do the right thing because it's right.
Do the right thing because it's right. Because you're respecting every other human being.
By doing that.
If you're not
doing
something.
Well, wasn't that the argument they were trying to use on us with the COVID masks and the shots?
Yeah.
Both of those things, they were trying moral imperative on society, and society said, get, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kant said that murder was wrong even in the case of self-defense.
So you should die.
No. He said,
let yourself be killed.
What he said was, we live in a society. We make allowances for that wrong act.
That we know they're out there.
Self-defense. But he said the actual act of taking a life, another person's life, is still morally wrong. Isn't that weird?
It is.
Because that's the universal, constant. Murder is wrong.
Yes, it should always be wrong.
And then we as a society
said we make exceptions.
So it's a universal law.
Well, that was
we basically make an exception to the universal law.
Well, that was the point of that last, hang on, I just lost it now. His last quote about policy. Honesty is better than any policy.
That's true.
Yeah.
If we could have that, that would be nice.
That would. But we can't count on everybody doing the moral imperative. We can't count on everybody doing what's right for all, not just for themselves, because greed is part of the amygdala, such a driving force, and it's stronger and it's faster, and we let it rule.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want to insult somebody, I guess, or maybe it might be a compliment. You really look like you have a big amygdala. But you got nothing on that prefrontal cortex. You need to work that baby out.
Your prefrontal cortex is shaking.
I did that. I put money in the Salvation Army bucket the other day.
So of all the versions of humanity, Kant was asked, what was the most essential?
The most essential part of being a human?
Being a moral
human. Oh, a good human.
Yeah.
If we consider a moral being good.
And it's broken down in a weird way. The answers are usually love.
Okay.
Or being sympathetic to others.
Okay.
Or altruism, being kind.
Kind.
To
I had thought about agape love.
And those are all
there.
Those are all great. But he says respect. Respect is the most important for one reason and one reason only. Cannot discriminate.
Yeah, it makes an. It, I was
one is
say
human.
Equality.
Therefore, one deserves respect.
Respect. Exactly.
That's it. There's no variation.
There's no your religion, your color, what you live in, what you drive, what you do.
He called it the formula for humanity.
But then that takes money
respect
out of
each
it.
And every individual.
Yes. So elitism is not respecting other humans.
Well, giving money to people killing each other in Russia, Ukraine, whatever,
is definitely not
is not nearly as respectable as fixing the water system in Jackson, Mississippi,
yes.
or Flint, Michigan.
If we want to talk moral imperatives, why do our politicians not understand?
Are we just going to wait for the I-10 bridge to collapse?
Apparently we are, because we can't come to a decision that the right thing to do is to fix that damn bridge before somebody dies.
It's a moral imperative.
I would
literally.
Think it is, because they have acknowledged. We all now know the truth. We all know that bridge is not structurally sound.
Of course it isn't.
For the kind of traffic that goes
of course
over
it. Isn't.
I wouldn't be structurally sound at that age with that kind of traffic.
I don't use the bridge.
No.
I'll go around.
Bella thinks we're
I will
lying.
Either go
I'm
through
not.
Westlake or,
yeah,
or
I won't
will,
use that
I'll
bridge anymore.
Use the 210 bridge, but I don't use that bridge. Period. End of story.
But across the country, there are those situations. And I don't know how the politicians are in the state of Mississippi, and particularly in the Jackson area, can live with themselves when people don't have clean
but
drinking
after,
water.
Yeah. But after hearing our congressman in Washington call for now a special commission, they need a special commission.
What are we commissioning specially?
They want to look over the books of the United States of America, because they just don't understand.
Where all the money's going?
Yeah, basically.
Why, just watch the news. They'll tell us.
Well, most of it's going to pay off the debt, the interest of paying off
yes.
the debt. But they don't stop spending money. The problem is, and this is crazy, I know, if you spend $1 this year and then next year you spend $1.50, you've spent more money.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It works no matter how big the number is. If you have a bigger number the next year,
you've spent more money. And I thought that technology was going to trim the fat in Washington because it does for most businesses.
They just announced, what was it, like $600 billion, or I don't even know, billions of dollars that they can't account for in the Defense Department.
I wonder why.
Who just got a new boost?
Well, wait, isn't that... Oh, that's on top of the money we've sent to other countries.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They don't know
where it is. Well, first of all, we left a bunch of it in Afghanistan, I'm sure.
Yes, if we're looking at inventory, certainly.
That's got to be part of their value, right?
Part of it, yeah.
And we've been sending stuff overseas.
Do you think they overvalued their equipment like they're claiming Trump has
done? Like Trump. Look, this tank is worth $5 billion. $5 billion, that's a bargain.
Well, and then what are they, when they come to us again as a public and say, hey,
we need more money
because we got to build our military because all of our stuff is gone.
And they always say the same thing. Well, it's entitlements like Social Security. No, yeah. Social Security was spent by you idiots.
Yes.
That's the problem with Social Security. That entitlement is paid for. People pay that entitlement.
They pay for their retirement, yes.
And it's very simple. You guys spent the money. That's how it get me going.
Yes.
But we have moral imperatives across this nation, and we have politicians who don't really believe in solving problems.
No, they believe in getting in office,
arguing,
and finding what they can do for themselves, and then arguing.
How can I help my friends? Yeah. All of your friends, if they were all following the moral imperative, would immediately begin doing things like fixing bridges, fixing water systems, not giving money to promote murder, which I'm pretty sure is not moral.
In any case. Yeah. Even if Kant was completely wrong, I just know in my heart it is not okay.
Yeah. It is just wrong. Wow. So morality, right. You know what? Kant was correct about one thing, which is if we all respected each other fully,
yeah,
as independent, sentient.
Thank you.
My bridge moved.
Stop it.
Anyway, if we all did that, then the world would be a much better place.
Well, clearly, we could definitely do better.
We're not being reasonable.
No, you just need to ask yourself, is there anything that I can do within my world of control and responsibility to make a difference? I mean, it's grassroots. And I think because of media and all the inundation that we have of information in our time, that we don't get back to grassroots like we should.
We don't maintain
society. And we certainly don't maintain infrastructure. It's all about what can I get now?
Right.
We live in that fast food society. That's a term for a reason. Except fast food has become way too expensive.
Oh.
Two chalupas, $30. Two. That's what Scarlett said. Two chalupas, like $30, Mom.
Six nuggets, $500. That's right. It was so expensive.
Are we living in the depression again? What's going on here? What is going on? So it's in your brain, people. It's in your brain.
It's in the front of your head.
Yeah. We used to think it was in your heart, but it's all in your head.
Yeah. The heart wants what the heart wants. Oh, stop it.
Well, your heart's running on your amygdala, and we know that that's not always a good thing. Is that why hearts give out so often?
Oh.
I don't know.
I think it's because they're not morally correct.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
What I did learn about all this moral imperative stuff?
What did you learn?
I learned this. There's a movie I never saw. I never watched the movie Sophie's Choice, which was based on a book.
Oh, yeah.
And then I go and read what it was about today because I saw a link and it said, see, it had all these philosophers, Socrates, Plato, Sophie's Choice. I'm like, what?
Well, how did that get
how
in there?
How is that in there?
Yeah,
is that?
Okay. Well, and so what year? That was like.
I don't even know.
The book was.
But
here, off.
The book is actually a. The book was 79. Yeah, 79.
Okay.
But a woman has to pick. I never saw it. Didn't know anything about it.
Yeah,
I thought Sophie's Choice was going to be about maybe like a horse.
I thought it was a horse. And when you said it to me, I was like, what the hell is this half? But I didn't want to admit admit my ignorance because 1979, I was a freshman in
high
school.
I want to emphasize that I actually thought Sophie's Choice was about like a racehorse.
A racehorse. I did too.
We couldn't have been more wrong.
No, we were mistaken.
The novel, which is set in World War II, a character must choose between the lives of her two children while in prison in a concentration camp.
Don't laugh while you describe my God.
How awful. This actress played a part. But no, the point is that I'm still laughing at the idea of if I could think of two things further apart.
A racehorse and...
That movie's about a racehorse, right?
It's about a concentration camp situation.
That's not the same thing at all.
And think of the doctor, the German in the camp who put her in that situation. What a horrendous human being.
So she has to pick one
daughter.
She has two kids, and she has to pick which one will be gassed or they will both be gassed.
So you either lose both your children... Or you lose one, and you choose which one.
Right. So either way,
she's left with a horrendous amount of trauma. And so is the daughter who lives.
And so that's – and it's a real downer story, man.
It's a real conundrum.
Yeah.
It's a psychological thriller.
But it's not about that. It's about the idea that we all are – confronted sometimes by choices
that
where there's no ethically good choice.
No, there's no right to any of that.
Because what is the right there? You don't have one.
No, the right would have been for them putting her in that. Well, the right would have been she wasn't in that situation. None of them would have been.
Well, the Nazis didn't ask.
Well, then you take that to such a higher level and say, what drove all of them to go so against the moral? And then we talk, is that brain? Is that cellular level stuff that's causing them to act in such a horrific way?
I'm gonna assume that the Nazis weren't big lovers of Kant.
No.
They couldn't have, right?
No.
They couldn't have been.
No.
I don't know. I haven't looked. You know what? I will. I'm going to go.
What was his year?
Oh, he's in the 1780s, 1790s.
Yeah.
And
so we don't think Hitler was reading that.
Well, first of all, if he was Jewish, no.
No, certainly not. Okay.
And yeah, you'd want to get him out of your society if you don't want to have morals guiding your.
Yeah.
And they didn't. I mean, that was the whole point, right? Don't let your morals guide you.
No.
Do what this guy says.
Prussian, German family, Lutheran, Protestant. He was born in
Prussian.
Into a Prussian family.
They were hardcore.
Wait a minute. Immanuel Kant's notion of enlightenment, Immanuel Kant and modern Jewish thought. They called it, put rabbi in quotes before it. What are you doing to me, Google? I thought you were the book of knowledge. Don't give
me. What are you doing?
Don't give me contradict. Say that was wrong. That was just wrong. And modern Jewish.
Can't we all get along?
Who is the most important and influential Jewish thinker in the modern period?
Kant.
Apparently so. Kant was certainly not Jewish, but I like to jokingly refer to him as rabbi because his writings on what it means to be a modern enlightened person shaped the contours of modern Judaism.
You'd like to say something bad, but you can't do it.
Across the ideological spectrum, from all thinkers that embrace the Enlightenment to those who radically rejected his movement.
There you go.
So that's what the Germans, that's what the Nazis were doing. They were radically rejecting Kant.
Yeah, categorical imperatives is what Kant was really talking about, and that we categorize, and then his whole thing was that the moral imperative is outside of any categorization. It's a universal constant.
Yeah.
And
so enlightenment is autonomy. You think for yourself and reason, understand the world through rational inquiry, and then the ability for all individuals from across all cultures to come to the same conclusion about fundamental human questions. That's really the issue, the universality of all of it.
Yeah.
That we all should come to those same conclusions.
And so that's the thing.
Why don't we?
Well, we run into the problem. a lot of people think Kant was not religious, and he was. But a quote he said I thought was interesting, which was, I had to take a little knowledge out of my brain to make room for faith.
Because he was so about reason and logic. So in order for him to accept it on a faith level,
he still believed that this greater power, and the Enlightenment guys were all kind of anti.
They weren't necessarily anti, but they were questioning
organized religion of the day.
And that made sense because
many of them, like Newton, as it turned out, was a Unitarian. He didn't believe in the Trinity, right?
Yeah.
So that would have gotten him in a lot of trouble at the time.
Yes.
And a lot of these guys were like that. And out of the Enlightenment, we have the deists.
Yes.
You know, they come
Thomas Jefferson
that.
And
our founding fathers, many of them were deists.
Yes.
That doesn't mean they didn't believe in God, but deists had a different view of how it all worked.
But they were thinkers, so they were constantly, I think they were constantly updating.
Sure.
Look,
they made these incredible ethical decisions about the government,
and it worked.
But they left one of the most unethical things
for
in.
A while.
They left one of the
So they left slavery in.
Yeah, that cannot possibly be.
But I think that was a political.
Correct.
So then, is our political so
means to an end? So it's not moral. It can't be a moral imperative if there's a goal or a reward at the end.
So then, politics is fundamentally.
Yeah.
Contrary to moral imperative.
Politicians can't follow moral imperative and be successful.
So then do we just accept it and say, okay?
I think we do.
Well, obviously.
I don't like it.
Obviously we do because we,
but
damn, we shouldn't be thinking. That's the problem. Okay. They don't educate us.
People are so confusing.
Yeah, they are.
They really are.
However.
What song are you playing now?
probably Jingle Bells, because that one keeps coming up. Every time I seem to be outside. White Christmas has been pretty prevalent, too. I should start a list.
I heard a while ago earlier, was it Silver Bells?
Yes, I've heard that one several times. It's been 3 days, folks. It's been three days. Well, Friday was the first, and I noticed it Friday morning, but we were gone to work, so through the whole day, we came home, and it was still playing. Like, that's weird. Went to bed, playing. Get up Monday morning.
Yep.
Saturday morning, 3 a.m., still playing.
Yeah.
Here it is Sunday afternoon.
Sure, it's still going.
Still playing. Yes.
I'm sure it is.
All right. But my moral imperative is to let
I'm hoping
let him
that
be,
a neighbor
and
then
somebody
it.
Else will take care of it.
That's all I'm hoping. I'm hopeful.
Because it's not driving me mad.
No.
It's just a bit of a
quandary. It's like a mosquito in your ear.
Yeah. Maybe so. So do we just want our people to follow? No, don't go with your gut, because your gut is your amygdala, and that may drive you.
Plus the poison that America gives us to put in our gut probably messes it up anyway. So use your gut.
You need your probiotics, and you need to balance. You need to find your balance.
You make your decision with your
That's
guts.
The only way. And be happy for people who do well.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Smile. Say please
and
thank you.
Yeah, so that we know your mental health is solid.
It is the Christmas season, and even though the music is
a little maddening,
tiring,
and we won't be with our family,
the spirit's there.
Yeah,
and that's just the way it goes.
It's just more about being genuine, and yeah.
And hey, if you're a new listener to Long in the Boot podcast, thank you.
Yes,
we've got a lot more downloads. Recently.
Our numbers have ramped
up,
and I didn't know if that was because we've said something outrageous.
I'm sure it's not that I sign into my podcast 50 times a day just to run the numbers up.
You do not.
I don't.
I look at it occasionally.
I listen to every podcast as before I put it out.
Just to make sure I didn't say something crazy.
Well, to remove all of your cuss words.
You know what? I feel like I was very, I restrained myself today. It was my moral imperative. I only said the F word one time.
Yeah.
And I think I might have said something else.
Yeah. And you didn't say penis, shit, or damn either.
No. And I didn't say the C word.
Yeah, there you go.
Because I just don't like it. It's just not a pleasant word. Some people hate moist.
Well, it's not moral.
I hate the C word. Oh, I don't know. Words aren't.
Hang on.
There's no morality to words.
Moist.
See, it doesn't bother me.
No, it doesn't bother me.
I live in the South. I like.
But there's probably somebody out there right now going, oh, don't do that. Moist.
Yes. As soon as I know somebody doesn't like it, I'm driven. It's an imperative to say it. Yes, I do. All right. So are people
moist and shiny.
Our new listeners, because we're pushing 10,000 now, so I know that
we're getting there.
Y'all enjoy. This will come out on Wednesday. I don't know what's going to happen between now and Wednesday. A couple weeks till Christmas.
Yeah, you never know.
I think we'll be back with you then.
Hopefully everything's
If we don't have anything
great.
To do, we might do a special thing.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Depends. I'm playing a video game right now. Not a lot of free time.
What are you playing?
Days Gone. Zombie thing. Lots of fun. Never played it when it came out.
Zombies have no morals.
You know they don't.
No. They just want to eat. They're all amygdala.
You know who else doesn't? Rippers.
Oh.
And rogues.
Oh,
I None know. Of them. None of them have any. And I think I'm doing missions for an immoral colonel.
Yeah.
I don't know yet, but he strikes me as not quite there.
Okay. Well, if you're following orders, sir, I don't think you can go back on
Yeah, I'm
that.
Only a corporal. I clearly
Yeah, you got no control.
Anything, but, all right. You know. Well. Anyway, so you guys take care. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
We will see you in 2 weeks. I want you to get out there into the world and take your joy with you. It is portable.
Y'all have a good one.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, I got a limp one here. What's going on?
You got a limp what?
I got a limp mic.
Well, you got to tighten it.
The nut is tight.
Tighten your nut.
My nut is tight.
I don't know.
I don't know. It doesn't seem. Do I sound all right?
I don't know. I don't know. Talk again.
Amygdala.
Yeah, I guess. I mean.
Okay.
I mean, how great do you need to sound, really? The important thing is me.
All right. You.
I gave you the better mic.
Did you?
Oh, the Shure SM7B is a quality microphone.
I'm working with
that. The people of Shure guarantee that it will sound great, and it absolutely does. In fact,
what you're saying
they should
is
probably send me
you're
two
saying
or three.
That I needed the better mic because I wasn't as good?
No.
Is this a crutch for me?
No, I'm giving you the better mic because it has a better response to your frequency.
All right. What is that frequency, Kenneth?
I don't know, but I have it set so that it gives you more bottom.
I don't need more bottom. Unless
well,
I'm in. Well, you know what? The Kardashians have allowed.
You know what?
I do thank those ladies for some things, and that's one of them.
Well, that microphone.
We're not twiggy ass anymore.
With the settings I've provided, that microphone wants nothing more.
to make my bottom sound
bottom.
Good. Okay. Am I your bottom bitch?
You're the microphone, hopefully, is. And
I got no place for my feet. I can't reach the floor.
What is that noise?
It's me trying to reach the floor.
Well, stop it.
Okay.
Put something under your feet.
I don't have anything. They're all supporting plants.
You took out your footrest?
I did.
Well, that was stupid.
I got a plant on it. It's been cold. My
then go get like a yoga block or something.
All right.
Hurry up.
On.
Hurry up. You see what I put up with, people? Do you see this?
I can't help it that I'm short.
The floor is just too low where you are. Short people. Short people got no reason to live. They got little arms, little legs.
Now you're trying to humiliate me. I see what your tactic is. I can't help it. It's my Cajun. It's the Cajun blood. All right.
Oh, God. Hopefully I'll cut that out. Maybe not. I might just leave it to show what I have to put up with.
Oh, this is tragic. Yes.
It is.
All right, I am fully ensconced in my.
Are you in your
in my perch?
Chair?
I am in my
you're,
command.
You're
chair.
There. You're ready to go.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Let me relax for a second. It's a hard rest.
You know, Erd, Curry, and Dvorak—they don't use headphones when they they have speakers, so I don't understand how they hear each other.
Oh, I like the headphones. I'm telling you, it makes me feel more in the moment.
Yeah.
That isolation. I mean, look what autistic kids do. They put on their headphones
sure.
to block out the shit noise of the world.
Yeah.